We'll call our council briefing meeting for October 19, 2011 to order. It's 9:04. We have a quorum and a birthday boy. We want to welcome Reverend Elizabeth McLean from Preston Hollow Presbyterian to give us an invocation. When I first came to Dallas in 1976, this was my home church, and my daughter was baptized there, and it's a great church for Dallas. Thank you very much for what you do as a church, and please lead us in prayer, and Ms. Coop will do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. Gracious God, we give you thanks for this day, for all the freedoms and responsibilities, hopes and fears, joys and concerns that come with it. We give thanks for the gifts of each person in this room, and may they be used to serve the common good over the needs of just a few, to give voice to the voiceless and protect those on the margins. O God, grant our elected leaders vision, imagination, and wisdom. This day, may they be patient and persevere. May they discern and use your wisdom to guide them in conversations and controversies, deliberations and debates, that by day's end, Dallas is a better city for all its inhabitants. Hear our prayers, O God. Amen.
Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And Ms. Medrano, you want to...
Absolutely. Good morning, everyone. I was in charge of Sheffy's birthday today, and we're waiting on the cake, but I did bring balloons, and I brought some party favors, so if everyone will put their hats and their little at the end. Party favors, so if we want to sing,
yeah,
okay,
sing.
Everyone, me. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jesse. Happy birthday to you.
We want to start a new tradition, Kathy, that we need everybody's going to ask where they will plan.
A stock monkey hat.
No, we'll pass it on, you know.
That's good.
You'll pass it on to somebody else's birthday next week. We recycle.
Thank you, Mr. Downs.
You're welcome.
I also.
It's also Forrest Turner's birthday.
Forrest Turner's birthday?
He's not around, but we'll see him later.
I also want to thank I want to thank Mary and her staff for having our Halloween lunch on Monday. We had a lot of city employees out there, and they were pumped up, and thank you very much. There were several people that did that, and I don't have their names, and I just want to give them some call out. Ms. Alonzo, I think you have a special presentation with a great organization.
Good morning, colleagues.
Good morning.
I think many of you have known the passion that I have for seniors, senior citizens, personas de la tercera edad, and I wanted to provide a special recognition, and I'm going to read as follows. Whereas La Voz del Anciano is the only bilingual bicultural nonprofit organization in the Dallas area whose primary focus is serving the needs of an estimated Latino elderly population of more than 50,000. Located in the heart of the inner city of West Dallas, Their mission is to empower and connect seniors of Dallas County to education, technology, health, and social services, collaborating to enrich the entire community. And whereas La Voz del Anciano serves as advocacy for the elderly, serving as a key communications link with governmental entities to gain public and community support in addressing the needs of elderly Latinos in Dallas County through service referrals and ease management, assessing individuals and family needs, determining eligibility, and working with governmental service providers to address the needs of those who meet eligibility criteria. And whereas La Voz del Anciano holds community forums at locations throughout the city of Dallas to inform residents about topics as diverse as home repair, elderly abuse, elderly employment, financial management, and living wills. And whereas La Voz del Anciano thanks Teofilo Espinosa, who was the head founder and has overwhelmingly success and is proud to have the opportunity to provide economic and social action awareness to the Latino senior citizens. Now, therefore, Mayor Michael Rollins, Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the Dallas City Council, do hereby extend special recognition to La Voz del Anciano for their commitment and dedication to improving the lives of Latino senior citizens in the Dallas community, presented by Councilwoman Monica Alonso, District 6. And I forgot to mention that this year they celebrate 35 years. And I wanted to recognize, is Jeff here? Mr. Gonzalez. Chairman Gonzalez is not in at the moment, but our executive director for La Voz del Anciano, Sylvia Lagos, and also Trini Garza.
Come on up.
Member of our senior
Trini.
Thank you very much for coming, and congratulations, and keep up the good work.
Good morning. I just want to say thank you very much. Thank you, Councilwoman Alonso, for recognizing La Voz del Anciano. La Voz del Anciano has been around for 35 years. I heard the mayor say he got here in 1976, and that's about the time La Voz del Anciano started. La Voz del Anciano is a very dedicated organization to the elderly in Dallas, Texas, in Dallas County. Being an elderly individual is really a challenge in today's economic world. Many of our seniors have a hard time because they live on Social Security, but all in all, they have their spirits. They love to have fun. It isn't all about just going and struggling every day. It's about when they come to our organization, they have a committee, and they love to have fun. Last week, actually, they had their Halloween party. They dressed up, and they had fun. They danced. We had over 60 seniors, and they had a wonderful time. They're looking forward to our next event, which is November the 17th at Keys Park, and you're all welcome. That's our Thanksgiving holiday, and believe me, there will be more music and more fun. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Josh?
Good morning, and pardon my fulfillment of a cultural imperative arriving late. But I was upstairs by way of explanation, and I was watching the briefing room, and all of a sudden I asked someone who was also staying there, so they gave me directions, and that is why I made it in the nick of time. But in Spanish, the elderly is referred to la tercera edad, and that refers to our own evolution as individuals as we go through our juvenile stage and to our adult stage and to our senior stage. And by the time we reach that point, many of us are reluctant to reach that point or to admit that we have reached that point. But the years should have brought with it a development of a certain wisdom and a certain insight but not always. And this is the unfortunate thing about our society, and maybe that's any society, not necessarily only our own. They don't always have the resources. They have that spirit that Sylvia alluded to. They have that cultivated humor that Sylvia alluded to. But the needs to survive are infinitely more imperative. So the recognition we are always grateful for as part of our human psyche, that maybe it's our foible that we'd like to receive acknowledgement. But the resources are so limited, as you all know. We're all at the table, and we're all in need, and we're all claiming the merit of our cause. And with those limited resources that are available at that public table, then it is infinitely more difficult to provide for that community. So thank you for your recognition. If it gives us a little boost, if it gives us some kind of elevation besides spiritually, then we are indeed grateful. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you, Trenny. Thank you, Mr. Alonzo.
Mayor, may I?
Yes.
Speaking of recognition, I also, with your permission, I wanted to recognize that the J.C. Zaragoza Recreation Center baseball team ended their baseball season with 28 wins, one tie, and no loss. I have to say that.
Judge, thank you for setting such a high standard of leaders in this city. You're a very wise and great man. Thank you very much. Yes, I'm sorry. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to say a public word about Grow Fest. We are in our fourth. We just finished our fourth Grow Fest this past weekend. The mayor was there to help us celebrate. Mr. Atkins has been there previously. Ms. Coop has been there. Ms. Mulgoan, have you been? No. And, of course, Mayor Pro Tem McDonald has been there. We started Grow Fest 4 years ago. It has grown. It started out with about 2,000 people, and it has grown. I think we had about 3,500 this year, Ms. McDonald. It's at the Dart Station at Lake June. Grow Fest, as you know, is a huge street festival. It's somewhat contained, but it's a huge street festival. It brings that community together, and everybody out there in Pleasant Grove comes to Grow Fest. It is a marvelously wonderful good time. There's children, there's old folks, there's folk painting, face painting, there's food, there's everything for a street fest. The mayor mentioned this year, he turned to me and he said, why don't we do this citywide? And I said, that's a good idea. And if anyone wants to know my idea, I've got an idea about how to take Grove Fest citywide. But just wanted to thank the people of Pleasant Grove and the sponsors and the major sponsor, Auto City, Blake Ingram, for another fabulous, fabulous Grove Fest. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Hasso.
Thank you, Mayor. I know we were all very busy this weekend. Saturday morning was the Halloween Fest at the Dallas Animal Services Shelter, and for the first time in history, in 2 days, we adopted out 82 animals. And so I want to thank all of the sponsors and the volunteers that came. It was a huge success. It was a record day. Thank you, all of you who have supported the Animal Services Shelter. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Medrano.
Thank you very much, and I know Ms. Hasso's pretty busy. Saturday morning, we had the mother-daughter women's summit at Scottish Rite, and we had UT Southwestern, we had DISD, we had Texas Can Academy, we had different, we had the county health department. And so Ms. Margola and I have spoken, and we want to take this across the city as well. Great information. We had great feedback, great evaluation from the summit. And all the speakers said that they would definitely do it because it was an eye-opening for me as well on a couple of the breakout sessions. So I hope that we will do it. Ms. Margola, I spoke with Ms. Alonso. She definitely would love to partner with you in Northwest Dallas. So thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins.
I just want to say on Grove Fest, Von Seal, great transition. I like the new location. because everybody can get to the DART station. And I think that if we do decide to go citywide, just look at the TODs, because it's easy for people getting on the train to get there and get back. It's easy to park, and so that might we can make sure it's not just like a parking lot, but it's a place that you can have different activities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins. All right, let's, first of all, your little education facts for the week. If anybody wanted to know, there were 314,000 students in the class of 2010 in the state of Texas. 84% graduated. We're about 70, in the low 70s in Dallas, so that's where we've got to get up to that Texas average there. Let me, before we approve the minutes, let me talk about the day. We'll do a little housekeeping. We'll approve the minutes and consideration. We will then take the item on long-range water supply up. We'll do that for the next hour. We need to leave here in the car no later than 10:15. Okay, so we got to, you know, about a little after 10, we're going to be heading down that way. We, for those of you who don't know, the City Council is going to be attending Ethical Leadership in Government Conference at SMU today. And for those of you that want to be part of that public and visit and see it, SMU will be streaming the seminar live on smu.edu/provost/ethics.aspx. And you can do that as well. Then we will come back here. We have a press conference at 1:15 in the flag room, and we will finish our briefings at 1:45. Most of the work today is going to be an executive session. We've got three issues that we need to get briefed on, and I think it's going to be a full day, I suspect, with those executive session briefings. So that's the way the morning will run. We'll make it as far as we can on the long-range water supply. Remember, this is part one of a three-part briefing. We've got water is a big issue for us. And this is, Ms. Soom is going to explain to us about how we're planning through that. So that's what today is on that. Ms. Soom?
This briefing is one of three, and we'll be doing the first one today and the other two the 16th. Today's briefing is to review with you how we do long-range water planning. And it's interesting to me that the city of Dallas has been doing long-range water planning from the 50s to the 60s, and in the 90s, the state recognized it needed to do it statewide. So this is a process we've been involved in for a long, long time. What happens is Dallas does its long-range planning. That plan is included in the Region C, which is the region long-range planning, which is rolled up to the state long-range plan. This briefing today reviews those processes and tells you the steps ahead, which include hiring someone to help us with the long-range plan and develop that, and that will go about a year's time, and during that time we'll give you an interim briefing. At the end of that year, it'll be brought back to you for your approval and review. So, Jody, are we all through with the other stuff? I'll finish then. The other two briefings that you will see, the 16th, are one, conservation and the things that we do for conservation and alternative ideas for conservation that we might want to pursue that you can review. And the other one is the issues of the current drought, its effect on us and our region and on the state, and the actions that we think we need to take in regard to that. So that'll be the 16th. Both of those will be incorporated in that briefing and for discussion at that point in time.
Thank you, Ms. Soom. We have two items of voting agenda. First, the approval of minutes of October
19, 2011. Excuse me, Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
Need the speaker?
I apologize.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mayor, just like
yes.
What time do you think that we will get to the DFW International briefing, International Board briefing nomination process? What time?
Probably right when we come back at 2.
At 1:45?
At 1:45.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, hopefully. It may be, we may have more questions on water.
Okay.
And yeah. So, excuse me, Ms. Rios. Yeah, open microphone.
Thank you. We have two speakers for you this morning. The first speaker is Thomas Manow, and David C. Boyd is the second speaker. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting, shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant at Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. You are allowed 3 minutes to speak. Please direct your comments to Mayor Rawlings. State your name and address for the record, please.
Okay, my name is Thomas Manaw. I'm a resident of Dallas, and my address is 9747 Amberley Drive, Dallas, Texas. I am a volunteer for Occupy Dallas. I am here not as an official spokesperson, but as a private citizen, expressing my own point of view. There is a perception among many protesters that a small number of Dallas police officers have been making inappropriate referrals to Occupy Dallas, and it's my purpose here is to ask the City Council to take whatever steps are necessary in order to make sure that city police personnel do not do that in the future, if they have in the past. Now, actually, we do have some evidence that that has been occurring, and this lady in the audience on my left, Jennifer, has a tape recording, about a 10-minute tape recording, documenting a woman having been stopped by the Dallas Police Department, threatened with arrest, but told that she should go to Occupy Dallas for food and shelter in lieu of going to jail. This is not appropriate, and we would like for the City Council to see that similar incidents do not occur in the future. Specifically, if a person is in need of mental health treatment, they should be referred to a mental health facility and not to Occupy Dallas. If a person is in need of detox treatment, they should be referred to a detox facility, not to Occupy Dallas. If a person is in need of food or shelter, they should be referred to a homeless shelter and not to Occupy Dallas. And maybe most important, for the safety of the people in Occupy Dallas and for the safety of the people that might be referred to Occupy Dallas, Dallas police personnel should not refer people who have committed a crime or are otherwise lawbreakers to Occupy Dallas in lieu of arrest. Not everybody in this country believes in the goals of Occupy Dallas. There is actually a minority of people. Most people are neutral or in favor of the goals of Occupy Dallas. It would not be unexpected for certain Dallas police officers to have a negative opinion of Occupy Dallas. That will happen. They should not be allowed to express those opinions through their official duties. And we ask that the City Council communicate our request to the Dallas Police Department to make sure that all personnel are properly informed and trained.
Thank you.
Your next speaker is David C. Fayou. David C. Fayou. And I apologize if I'm mispronouncing your name.
That's okay. It's David Bayoud, B-A-Y-O-U-D. I'm a resident of Dallas, Texas. I was born and raised here. I reside at 6207 Bryan Parkway in Dallas, Texas. I represent a group by the name of Keep Our Pets Alive, and we're here today to discuss a situation where we've requested to be part of a task force that was recently put together, and I requested myself with other people to get on the task force. And we have called and have been told no to join, And then we were told to volunteer online at their website. And once you do that, they never get back with you. Even an attorney that works with us tried to get on that, and they were declined. We are part of a nationwide group that this task force that's been put together. We are a nationwide group that the No Kill Initiative has actually worked. It's a formula that will save taxpayers money, but more importantly, it's going to save healthy, adoptable pets. This initiative is noble for the city, and the fact of the matter is that this no-kill equation works. I want to be part of that representation of the nationwide no-kill initiative. It's working in other parts of the country. It's a very, very doable thing to do in this city. It only helps the city to become part of a wonderful, wonderful thing, and that is saving innocent, healthy pets' lives. I must say right now, I think it's wonderful what the new director has done the last few months. We want to support her at the shelter. We want to give her our thoughts and opinions. We also want to make sure that this is taken care of. I want to be a part of that. I feel like I should be part of that task force. And I represent, again, a group that is nationwide who actually sees results. They are seeing results in other parts of the country. I think the city of Dallas should take the initiative to do what works. And I would like to speak to someone, either at the city manager's office or the mayor's office, to ask them politely to have me represent this nationwide group that actually is doing something about these pets. I'm asking you, please give us that chance. Thank you.
Thank you. And Joey Sabata will be meeting with you and making sure we take your name and information so you can get engaged in the right way. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you all. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yes, Ms.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. To our first speaker, Mr. Manoa, I apologize if I'm saying that wrong. Mr. Mayor, could we have a memorandum sent to our police to ensure that folks aren't being referred to Occupy Dallas if they're homeless or mentally ill or criminals or whatever?
We've already had that discussion with them when the issue first came up, so they understand.
So we've got that resolved.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, Ms. Rios.
Thank you. We proceed now with your first voting agenda item, which is approval of the minutes of the October 19, 2011 City Council meeting.
Do we have a motion to approve?
Second.
We've got a motion and a second. Any questions, additions, comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Your next item is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions and the evaluation and duties of board and commission members. You do have several individuals for your consideration this morning. We will be separating one individual on your list. That is Ricardo Medrano. He is a relative of Mayor Pro Tem Medrano, who will be abstaining from that appointment. To the Animal Shelter Commission, you have Maleska Flepes to fill the general public category, nominated by Councilmember Cadane. To the Cultural Affairs Commission, Stephen S. Harris is nominated by Councilmember Allen to fill the Performing Arts category. Maura Wright Conley, nominated by Councilmember Margolin to fill the Cultural Board Experience. To City Plan and Zoning Commission, John Chalene is nominated by Councilmember Allen. To the Civil Service Board Adjunct Members, Calvin Robinson is nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins. To the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Center Board, Leonard J. Hammond II is nominated by Councilmember Allen. To the Park and Recreation Board, Jerry Wayne Smith is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. To the Permit and License Appeal Board, Wilma Avalos is nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. James A. Morris is nominated by Councilmember Cadane. That is also to the Permit and License Appeal Board. to the Senior Affairs Commission, John E. Roberts, is nominated by Deputy Mayor Pro Tem Atkins to fill the 55-plus year of age category. To the South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund Board, Gerald V. Larson, to fill the business category, is nominated by Councilmember Allen. Your full council appointment nominees: to the Housing Finance Corporation Board, Jorge L. Calderon, is nominated by Councilmember Margolin. To the Resident Zone 5 Board City Center, Kirby White, is nominated by Councilmember Hunt to fill the registered voter category. To the Reinvestment Zone 6 Board Farmers Market, Ross Sherwood Martin, to fill the registered voter category, is nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. To the Reinvestment Zone 8 Board Design District, William Mundinger III is nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Medrano to fill the registered voter category. To the Reinvestment Zone 9 Board Rickery Meadow, Raj Narayanan is nominated to fill the registered voter category by Councilmember Margolin. To the Reinvestment Zone 10 Board Southwestern Medical, Ross Sherwood Martin is nominated to fill the registered voter category by Mayor Pro Tem Medrano. To the Reinvestment Zone 11 Board Downtown Connection, Kirby White is registered voter, is nominated by Councilmember Hunt. Reinvestment Zone 16 Board Davis Garden, Ed Oakley is a registered voter, is co-nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Medrano and Councilmember Hasso. To the Reinvestment Zone 19 Board Cypress Waters, Mary Paz is a registered voter, is co-nominated by Councilmember Cadane and Councilmember Alonzo. So you're not your first set of nominees this morning.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Thank you. Your next nominee, and again, Mayor Pro Tem Medrano is abstaining from this vote, is Ricardo Medrano to the Permit and License Appeal Board, is nominated by Councilmember Hill.
Got a motion and a second. Any questions? All in favor say aye. Motion is carried.
Thank you. Also, staff will be providing to the City Council a copy of a report. We do have various nominees that are still in the background check process. As we had mentioned before, that review process does tend to take maybe anywhere up to 45 days. Staff does make a strong effort to try to process those individuals as fast as possible. So you'll receive a copy of that report, and it will show you kind of the status of where your nominees are. Thank you. That concludes your voting agenda item.
Thank you, Ms. Rios. Would you stay up there, because I'm going to do the proverbial flip-flop, okay? And because of the time, I don't think we can get enough of the water done. I want to put that off to this afternoon, take the first agenda item on DFW International Airport Board of Directors process, and we'll get that work done before we leave.
Thank you, Mr.
I asked Ms. Coop to put together a new process that assured us that we got the very best appointees at the DFW Airport Board. It's such a huge and important asset for the City of Dallas, and I think we all want the very best that represent our community in all senses of the word. So she's been working on that, and Ms. Coop and Ms. Rios.
Thank you. The purpose of this briefing is to present you the overview not only of the current appointment process for the DFW International Airport Board of Directors, but also to discuss with you the proposed changes to that nomination and appointment process. A lot of the steps are basically the same. All individuals are required to have a nominating memo. The exception will be, rather than an application, we are requesting that a resume and a bio be provided. The City of Dallas appoints 6 members to the DFW Board. Places 1, 5, and 6 expire January 31st of odd-numbered years. Places 4, 6, and 9 expire January 31st of even-numbered years. So for this year, for the upcoming 2012 even-numbered year, you're going to have places 4, 6, and 9 come up for reappointment. And, of course, for City Council Resolution Number 76-1888, the mayor is automatically appointed to fill place 10. You'll have for your comparison on the left-hand side of the PowerPoint kind of outlines what the current appointment process is. So during September, you have where the City Council nominates or renominates existing board members to the DFW board. And during that process, usually we receive maybe one or two names. We haven't gotten a very large pool of nominees with the current process. And, of course, we have to process the background checks. And then the council members would nominate individuals to a specific place. In December, that would be the deadline for receiving nominations, renominations. However, at the request of council members, that deadline has been waived and nominees have been accepted well past the deadline. During January, the Transportation and Environment Council Committee conducts group interviews and then nominates or makes recommendations to the City Council to appoint specific individuals based upon their review and interviews. And however, council members have at the time of that appointment process moved to interject or to basically consider or substitute other names. That has caused problems in the past because we have to do a background check. And then, of course, during February, that's basically when the new term begins. There are no term limitations to DFW board members, and if not appointed, if no reappointment or appointment takes place, then they do serve as holdover. Under the new process, during November, mayor and city council members would each submit up to 3 nominations or renominations to the city secretary's office. That would give you 45 potential nominees. So what that would do is it would actually increase the pool of nominees, which would give you a wider category of qualifications. And then, of course, as mentioned earlier, we do still require a nominating memo, and it would include a resume and bio. That information would then be provided to the TEC. The nominating memo in this instance would not require that you clarify what place your nominee is being nominated for. In December, the Transportation and Environment Committee would review all the nominees and select up to 6 candidates to interview. Based on those 6 candidates, then the City Secretary's office would begin the background check. In January, the TEC would interview the 6 candidates, of course, if they pass the background checks, and then make recommendation of 3 of those individuals for council appointment. The City Council would then vote on the 3 recommended nominees from the Transportation Committee, and the City Secretary's office would then place the appointees in place order after the City Council has voted on them, and of course the new term would begin in February. This process was similar to what was used for the gas drilling task force, and that apparently seemed to have worked very well for the City Council. We're also looking to possibly implement a similar appointment process for the DART board. And, of course, the process would be fine-tuned as the need was either arose or was identified. The change is, of course, in order to increase accountability of board members. When you have a wider area of nominees based on their qualifications, then you're kind of able to really fine-tune what you want the DFW board to do on the behalf of the City of Dallas. Again, it increases the pool of potential candidates. It increases the opportunity of individuals with unique backgrounds and experiences to serve on the board. It does eliminate unexpected competition among nominees and renominees, and it does ensure timely background checks from all nominees so that the term appointment would begin when it is scheduled for. The timeline, again, during November 2nd, you're receiving the briefing. On November 16th, the City Council would take action on a resolution formalizing the new process. That, of course, would be based on any issues or anything that the City Council does feel that they would want to include in the process aside from what was presented today. November 11th would be the deadline for nominations, renominations to be submitted to the City Secretary's office. December 1, the TEC would select the 6 nominees based on the total number of nominees that were submitted by the full City Council. On January 9, the TEC would interview the 6 nominees and then select the 3 to recommend to the City Council. On January 11, 2012, the City Council would vote on those 3 individuals. The one thing to remember when making a nomination is that there are at least 2 qualifications the required one is that the individual selected would have to be, for a period of at least 1 year preceding his appointment, be a reside within the city of Dallas, and they have to be a qualified voter in the state of Texas for 3 years preceding that appointment. And I don't know if you have any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Rios. Ms. Coop?
Right. Colleagues, we've had this process in place for the DFW board and the DART board for the last couple of years now. We've changed the process in the last 6 years a couple of times since I've been chair of TEC, trying to refine the process, trying to make it, you know, get more candidates involved, that kind of thing. I've been to most of your offices to ask for your input on this. You've given me some great input, as a matter of fact. There's been several different iterations of this, and some of the problems, I guess, that I've seen over the years is one that once you put a candidate up in a specific place, like say it's place, I would say it's place one, that automatically sets up this competition where the person that puts in the name, and then if another person puts in another name, it sets up competition even between council members. So the thought was that everybody can put up to three names, including the mayor. And in doing so, we have a larger pool of candidates from which to draw, and it's not my candidate against your candidate. So I think that it probably will serve us fairly well that we don't place the candidates into a slot until after the process is over. It also will be helpful that we don't have to run everybody through a background check until we get to the winnowing down to six candidates. That will be helpful. That's a tremendous amount of resources that we use through the city secretary's office and the city attorney's office to do background checks. So I'm open to suggestions if you want to consider other things, as well as I'm sure the mayor is, but most of you have come to me with your concerns, and I think we've kind of come to, you know, some type of conclusion that this process would probably be a better process. One thing is that by resolution, if we decide that we don't like the process after we've done it one term, just by resolution, we can undo it and we can go back to a different process. Those of you who are on either judicial nominating or on gasoline task force, I think we've had some really good success. Ms. Hunt did that original process with judicial nominating, had some really good success. The one question that was brought up several times was, how would we determine that there was equal representation amongst all groups of minorities and ethnicities to represent on the DFW board? Interestingly enough, in both the case of judicial nominating and the case of gas drilling, those questions were discussed in an open forum. This is a very transparent process, and we got a good mix, I think, of candidates and also appointees at the end of those processes. So these three candidates that are up right now are, just to let you know, place six is Mr. Hsu, place nine is Ms. Washington, place number four is Mr. Smith. Those may well be the candidates that we end up with at the end of the process, because their names can be submitted by anyone as one of the three candidates. But if it works well this time, just going through the process, I would suggest that we carry it through the DART nomination process and the further DFW nomination process.
Thank you, Ms. Coop. Mr. Atkins?
I guess London, you know, great, you know, take this on to try to go to all the council members and everyone have input, you know, in this decision. Rosa, on page six on your timeline.
Yes, sir.
I think the third bullet with the memo that we received on October 31st, it said everything should be submitted on November 11th. On her said November 11th. On that memo, it said November 18th. So I know. Which one is it?
Well, we're actually hoping for November 11th, because what happened was it took a little bit of time to work out all the details about how the process would work. Initially, the memo would have been distributed about maybe like a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I was just letting him point out, you know, since, you know, we have naturally decided the week of the 11th, and if most people will be away, I will make a motion, whatever, to change that to November 18th, so give everybody have time to give input.
If there's no motion required, we can certainly modify the timeline.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cadane?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I know when we previously started this process of trying to come up with a new way, originally did we not come up with the mayor would pick from the 45 and then bring us six? And is that kind of what we originally said?
Right. Do you want me to address that?
Yep. Can you address that?
That is originally one of the concepts that we brought to you, was that the mayor would pick from the 45, much like it is right now in Fort Worth, as a matter of fact. The mayor makes the appointments from Fort Worth to the VFW board. I don't know if he asks everybody for input, but he makes the appointments.
She does.
I'm sorry. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. She does. And then the council just consents on it. They just, by resolution, consent on those appointees. I did get several council members that felt like that was not a transparent process. If you want to go to that process, I don't have a problem with that. I see that. I see pros and cons of that. I see more positives than negatives from that. But this was the reason that I was suggesting this particular process is because I did get several council members that didn't feel like that process was as transparent as they would like it. Now, that's totally up to the council. It can be very easily switched. But, yes, that was an original concept that came up. Another concept that came up was allowing the mayor pro tem and deputy mayor pro tem to make that decision. Same issue as before. It wasn't transparent as enough for some council members. So, and when I'm saying transparent, I just mean out in the public domain for a lot of council members, and that's how come we switched to this one, which is a process like judicial, more like gas drilling, where there's a conversation in the public and they can watch it on television and so on and so forth. So
I like that way also, where the mayor did do it, kind of stuff takes away from, well, why didn't my candidate get it, and how come they didn't pick him? We can put our candidates up, and then it's really out of our hands. It goes back to the mayor, and I think we'd get a great quality board there doing that, and it would probably help council to, I mean, it's tough on us when we say we want to put somebody up, and then all of a sudden you say, well, we're putting you up, and, well, what happened? How come I didn't get on? Well, it's easier for me to put it off on the mayor and then come back off to me. Yeah. But I think it's really a good way of getting a good quality people on that board. And I really like that. And I'd like to see it go that route if we could. Now, I don't know whether we can change it, or I guess the council could approve or disapprove that. Is that right, Rosa?
Yes, that's correct. You could actually possibly reach a consensus at this point in time.
Uh-huh.
Or when the resolution comes up for your consideration, mm-hmm. then somebody could amend whatever we present to you if that still doesn't meet your preference.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Cadane.
Thank you, ma'am.
Mr. Carraway.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Ms. Coop, for your hard work on this issue. And I do agree with Sheffy. You know, I don't really have a problem with that particular process. You know, we all have an opportunity to put in our three names, and potentially that would be 45. I think it removes a lot of the lobbying and politics of it if it is, you know, reduced to six, and then the recommendation leaves the mayor's hands and then comes to the council, and then the politics begin. At this particular point, I'm not having a major problem with that at all. I want to minimize and the mayor is elected by all the people in the city of Dallas, so he has a responsibility to every ethnicity and every citizen. So it's just like Sheffy said, whatever goes wrong, we just put it on the mayor and deal with it from there. But nothing will go wrong, but I think that we need to figure out a way to streamline it and keep it as transparent. And at this point, I'm not having a problem with that particular process.
Okay. Ms. Hustle?
Thank you, Mayor. I am for the timeline that we have here and for the process that Linda has brought forth. I did have a problem with the deadline being on the 11th and then the resolution not being till the 16th. So now that we've moved the deadline to the 18th, we will have time to act on the resolution before we submit, we have before the final deadline for submission. My next question is, will we be taking these in order of who is up? For instance, there's three places up right now, so we will only submit three names for three places.
Yes.
And then as the next one comes up, we do three for those next three. Well, as I said, I think this is very transparent. I was part of the gas drilling task force nomination. I think that worked well where people could see exactly what the process was. So I'm very comfortable with Linda's effort on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Cook, thank you for your work and for coming around. I'm one of the people who was adamantly opposed to giving the process over to the mayor. In my opinion, that smacks of and goes in the direction of strong mayor. I am absolutely, immovably opposed to that. I like Ms. Cook's process. I don't have a problem with the mayor's judgment or integrity. Please understand that. It is the process of giving over what I think is the council's authority to the mayor. That was the same issue in Strong Mayor. I was opposed then, I'm opposed now, and I will continue to be opposed if that is the process brought forth. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Michelle. Ms. Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, Linda, thank you so much for putting this together. I know this was a lot of work. It's always hard to figure out a new process that will work better, and I think you did a really great job of working with everyone to come up with a great process. So thank you for your hard work on that. I think this process is much improved from what we've done for the last few times we've nominated, and I've been here. We've been here, Linda and Pauline and I, for 6 years now, and I think we can do a better job of getting people on the DFW board. One of the challenges that I've seen over this time has been that while our partner city has seemed unanimous in many of its decision-making processes, we haven't quite gotten there. And I think that's been to our detriment. And I think that we can, through this process, perhaps see greater unanimity and a more singular voice on the DFW board. It really has been to our detriment on a number of issues. I would say, though, that I did discuss with Linda the possibility of the mayor selecting the members to the DFW board, and I'm supportive of that, and I'll tell you why. I think that will ensure even greater accountability, even greater responsiveness to the city of Dallas. And the reason I disagree with my esteemed colleague, Ms. Hill, on this issue is the process itself still remains in the hands of the council. If we feel that the mayor's somehow taking advantage of this process or is not appointing the right people, a majority of this council can change this process at any time. And we could pull the plug on it and say, let's go back. Let's pull back and let the council decide. But, colleagues, I really do believe it's worth trying for one round of this to allow the mayor to select, to allow us to nominate and the mayor to select, to see how this goes. If it fails, if it's a grand failure, we can pull back and recoup, no pun intended, Ms. Cooper. But I think there's a strong possibility that it could be much more successful than anything we've tried thus far. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Let me just clarify what Mr. Kadane asked. One of the ideas was that the mayor would choose six candidates, not choose the final three. It was choose the six candidates of the pool. I don't think the idea was ever to make the final recommendation. I want to spend about five more, let's get out of here by 12 after, because we have got to be on that bus. So I'm sorry, Ms. Medrano first.
Thank you very much. I'm the mayor's alternate to DFW board, and I would invite some of the council members, when you can come, to the DFW board to see our board members in action, to see what type of agendas there are, agenda items are on DFW board. We have to remember that this is one of our major economic engines for not only the city, but for our region, and the responsibility that DFW board has, and that may give you some idea of other folks that are, in your district or around the city, of who may, do either a better job or a good job, or would be an excellent appointee on the board as well. You learned a whole lot at DFW, so I invite you to come. I think it's about a four-hour meeting. You can come and go as you please, but I think it's very enlightening to go by to DFW. Thank you.
Good. Ms. Davis?
Thank you so much. Ms. Coop, I hope on your transportation committee that you can pull that together where you can, as council members, that your committee plus council members who want to go to a meeting to be able to go. So if you can set that up, I sure would appreciate it. I have to say, when Ms. Coop, Councilmember Coop called me and asked me my preference, I don't support a strong mayor form of government. Never have and never will. I think it puts too much power in the mayor's hand. What I did ask her and told her that I like what we did on the gas drilling. A committee was pulled together. We selected the, 12 people, 13, I forgot. And then we took it to the mayor, the deputy mayor pro tem, and the mayor pro tem. And then they kind of looked at it. And then they picked out the best six or seven and then brought it back to the full council. I just think it gives the mayor, and no disrespect to you, Mayor Rowland, I just think it gives the mayor too much power and selecting six or seven people. Now, the problem is, and my distinguished colleague, Ms. Angela Hunt, said we can change it at any time. The problem is the mayor becomes a little upset about us changing who he has selected. Then we get into this tick-tick with each other, and then the round starts, and that's the problem that I have. So that's my concern, is that we just make sure we've gone down that road before, and I don't want to go back down that road again. If we didn't like something that a particular mayor did, then the round started, and then here we were all back in this hurdle again. So I just would think that we go a little different route.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll keep my comments brief. Councilmember Coop did a wonderful job pulling this together, and I'm supportive of the presently proposed timeline with the change we talked about, as well as the format. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Briggs. Mr. Allen.
I think we all agree all we want is the brightest, most intelligent, and individuals to serve on that board. Again, Ms. Coop, thank you for your leadership on this. I would be supporting the mayor bringing us, first of all, us taking to the mayor nominations, and then he picking six and bringing them back to us. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. This is a process question, Ms. Rios. This needs to be voted on by the council, right?
Well, the council can just basically, by consensus at this point, let us know what their preference is, whether the nominees are submitted to you or to
what I'm going to suggest is I'm going to ask Ms. Coop to consider what's been said. If she thinks this is what's right, we will come back, you know, next Wednesday. I mean, after you talk to people, I mean, there's some people who have been wanting you to. Okay. All right. Who's in favor of this?
With the change of the
No, I'm sorry. As stated, the way Ms. Coop and Ms. Rios just
with
a change in the date, yes.
November 18th.
Yes.
Oh.
In favor of that, there's three.
Six, seven.
Okay, six. So we've got majority there on that. Okay. We had nine, didn't we?
Seven.
One, two, I can't count. Three, four, five, six, seven, eight. There were eight of us. So we were firmly split with you. Okay? I'm okay with it either way. I'm going to tell you this. I'm going to fall on a hand grenade if I don't think we get the greatest people. Okay? Just,
if it doesn't work, Mayor, we can always come back and try a different way.
I appreciate everybody's empowering the mayor in this. There's a straw vote. Okay. I know what you did. I was just saying. What literally do we need to do? Do we need to take action?
No, not today. This is strictly a briefing. What
okay,
we'll do is on
thank
November
you.
16th.
So Ms. Coop understands what we have, and then she'll bring it back, okay?
Right.
Okay, thank you very much. The meeting is recessed. If the city council could go get on the buses, we will. I'm going to make one of the changes. We're going to restart at 2 o'clock this afternoon here to do water. 2 o'clock.
Recess at 10:04?
We're having lunch there. All right. We will call back to order. Council briefing meeting at 2:01 in the afternoon. Thank you, council members, for participating in our conference at SMU and the briefing and the lunch. I thought it was excellent, and I learned a lot, and I hope everybody thought it was worth their time. I know it's, yeah. Why don't we do it after this? Okay? All right.
This is the first of three briefings. This one's on the long-range plan and the planning, and we'll be working on this for the next 18 months, basically. Jody?
Good afternoon. In your briefing materials, you have, before you kind of run through it fairly quickly, but hit, I think, the important notes. Early in the slide, there's a little bit of an outline on, I think it's on slide three. Gives you an idea of the process we're going to go through, a little bit about how the state plan fits in to what we try to accomplish, and some of our history about planning. On slide five is a kind of one of our quotable quotes, or notable quotes. One of my favorite, really, is whiskey is for drinking, water's for fighting, and I think it's been that way for all of time. Whether I like whiskey or not is not important. Going on, a little bit of condition about the drought on slide six. As we know that there are...
I don't think that's you. I think
I don't know
somebody
if it's me or not, but now it's not me.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I apologize. As you all know, 2011 has been one of the driest years, or the driest year on record, since 1895, when the state began keeping those records. And there's well documented the fiscal impact of the state regarding that drought. Additionally, we've heard comments from the state climatologists and other forecasting that this drought could be with us for a while, could be similar to the drought of record. Why that's relevant to us is our ongoing planning process. On slide seven, it's a continuous, never-ending loop, so to speak, always looking for safe, sufficient water supply, and it's been a success for Dallas and this region. We began back in the 1870s when Dallas was established. We relied on springs and the river water for many years, but later, during this process of growth, we built water supplies to help serve our customers. Slide 8 gives you a little sense of that. The surface water that we've been utilizing for many, many years is really the state's water. We're granted stewardship of that water. We've constructed and partnered on reservoir construction to have that water available for our use. An example of the timing it takes to get a large project completed is exemplified by the Lake Ray Roberts project, which is north of Lake Louisville. So you can see there easily a 30-year process to get a new supply in place. That's why it's important for us to continually plan our process. In addition, our wholesale customers share in those costs and benefit from the economies that Dallas as a regional supplier have gained through its process. A little bit about the planning guidelines. It's a fairly straightforward process on slide 9. It's really about supply and demand. Our plan is to have enough reservoir per mule to meet demand throughout this drought of record. That's the planning model that the state has used. As some folks may recognize, that could be an issue as we move forward. The changes in climate may affect and will affect our ability to potentially meet demand. When we go through our process, we rank the supplies, as you can see on slide 9, based on the cost, efficiency, environmental impact, and the chance or the likelihood of that being developed. As you also know, water located closer to the city or the service area is generally cheaper. Don't have to pump it. Pipelines are not as long, so forth and so on. Slide 10 is just a graphic of what I've tried to say. Again, the components on that left side of that chart go in through an evaluation process that we've done. So, and we've been doing this planning process for some time, really. Slide 11 gives you an idea of the different planning periods that we go through and have gone through to update where the projects are and how we're doing as far as gaining that additional supply. The last update of a long-range plan we did was in 05, and as a result of that, the council then adopted strategies that went into the current draft state plan. One important note on slide 12, you look at the economic impact of an inadequate water supply. The numbers here are just big, for lack of a better term. But long term for the region and the state, there's a huge economic impact for jobs and economic income for the state and the region. It's important to understand, and most of you, I think, remember these numbers, but our integrated pipeline project, for example, that we've partnered with Tarrant Regional on to bring water in from the southeast, in our case, Lake Palestine, saves us about $200 million just on capital costs alone, and that's a $1 billion project for us over the long term. The steps that we go through in water supply planning on slide 13 kind of gives you that checklist, so to speak, of where we'll be going. We create a plan, we vet it through stakeholders, we bring it to council, that process is, and recommendations are adopted, that gets forwarded to the regional plan, and that gets then incorporated in a statewide plan. A little bit about the statewide planning effort on slide 15. Again, it started back in 1997, Senate Bill 1. That Senate Bill 1 was born out of the drought of 1996, so I think that this planning process has served us quite well, helping build regional coalitions and really identifying future needs and risks associated with that. Again, the state is currently in its third round of this regional planning, and a state draft plan is out and scheduled to be approved by the Water Development Board in January 2012. Region C is our part, or our location in that grouping. You can see on slide 16 kind of what that looks like. That's about a 16-county area, about 25% of the state's population, and roughly 3 to 4 wholesale providers, us being one of them, provide for most of the population in this region. When you look at slide 17, it gives you a breakout of how the Region C recommendations, which we were a part of, are broken out by type of source, whether it's new reservoirs, connecting existing reservoirs, for instance, is the Lake Palestine example. A little bit more about the state's draft plan that's currently out for public comment. It includes, again, like I mentioned before, a drought of record planning, component in it. It's trying to address the state's growth and its water demand needs. Another important part of that is the state plan is estimated to cost $53 billion to implement. That's also kind of staggering numbers, but the loss, again, in the economic side is tremendous as well. The next few slides, starting on 19, give you some issues or recommendations that specifically are outlined in the plan. And I won't go through them individually, but I'll highlight a few of them. Reservoir site designation is an issue that helps to attempt to preserve reservoir sites for future development. In the last legislative, in two legislative sessions ago, there were a few sites designated, such as Marvin Nichols, Lake Fastrel, and a couple of others. This proposes to add a few more. In addition, it allows for some river and stream segment designations to preserve some ecological value for these stream segments. So that's another component of it. The other thing I think that's there's two others. Reservoir site acquisition. The state's recommending something that would look at a mechanism to address these reservoir sites to preserve them for future use. The last point I think that germane has to do with the financing of the state water plan. The legislature over the last few sessions has looked at tap fees and other types of fees in order to try to fund a statewide plan. Those have not been successful for a number of reasons. But one step that the state's taken, the legislature's taken, and that's on the ballot for November 8th, early voting is open, by the way, is Proposition 2, which would give additional bonding capacity for the Water Development Board. Many, many utilities and cities utilize these funds to help develop their systems. And we, in fact, have used some of the state's money to do a project at our Eastside plant and saved some money on that one. But there are some issues on slide 21 that have not been fully addressed in the state plan. Again, population and the demand changes associated with that, and issues associated with environmental flow standards, which might limit the amount of water that's available, as well as changes in climate or weather variability. So those are just kind of the backdrop of the current plan, which feeds into where we want to go forward. Slide 22 gives you the listing of the items, recommendations that we have in the 2012 plan, and from this point forward, we'll be looking at how those fit in and need to be revised as we move along into this next planning process. To give you a brief look in the mirror, so to speak, on where we how we got to this point, slide 24 gives you, again, the ideas of the components that we put into that plan, how we got to this point, and now it's time for us to update and review those and see how we move forward on some of them. It's important for us to understand or to recognize that conservation is a fundamental part of our plan. It's slide 25 goes through how that's an important part and actually has begun to really serve us well. We've really been dedicated, I'm not sure that's the right word, but for our conservation programs for about the last 10 years or so and have seen great improvements in demand management and reduction. The reuse water on the next slide is also a big part of that. So conservation and reuse is wastewater effluent from our treatment plants that can be used for non-potable purposes. Examples of our Cedar Crest line, Stevens Park line, which will be coming on in the spring, will help us do that. I'll move on to slide 27 to kind of give you a checklist, so to speak, of where we are on the certain supplies to meet that 2060 demand. It's outlined on 27. It's important to also recognize the loss of Lake Fastrel as an opportunity for us when a wildlife refuge was designated within the footprint of that site. There are some opportunities that we'll look at in this future planning over the next few years about using nature's river water, but maybe not building a, a reservoir, or maybe building a smaller off-site reservoir. So that'll be part of our investigation as we go through the process. Other strategies on slide 28, some of those options on the table that we talk about that we'll be looking at and reviewing their role in our future planning process as we get through this new study. The next slide gives you an idea of where some of those options are. I call this kind of my dartboard because it kind of gives you the concentric rings about how far things are getting away from our region. And you see Lake Palestine that's down around the 75 to 100 mile line out toward the southeast. So that's the last reservoir that we own rights in to bring forward to our system. And some people ask me, why East Texas? Why do you pick on East Texas? Well, East Texas historically has the rainfall and the yield for those reservoirs out there. Slide 30 shows you in a graphic form the rainfall that historically or average falls in those areas. It's fair to note that map looks a lot different this last year. Looks a lot different. Slide 31 gives you some barriers that we're faced with as we go through this process. Many of these are repeated because these issues don't have a big change. I think the barriers get tougher, though, as we move further down the line. Again, we'll be evaluating the supplies based on the items that you see on slide 32, cost, efficiency, environmental impact, and such. And an important part of I think, our evaluation is how we're able to regionally cooperate to produce additional water for our region. Going into the next section of our briefing, slide 34 gives you a graphic or a map view of how we fit in. And as I mentioned earlier, these three areas, Tarrant Regional Water District, which is in the blue, we're in that purple color, and then the North Texas Municipal Water District, we make up the bulk of the raw water supply for the region. We collectively serve over 6 million people. So that, and then the region's, I think, 7 to 8-ish. Looking at some examples of recent regional cooperation, as you mentioned, the Integrated Pipeline Project or IPL project. We've been working with the North Texas Municipal Water District on a reuse line with Lake Ray Hubbard and a main stem pump station option to try to more efficiently use the return flow or the reuse water. And we've had some discussion with the Sabine River Authority regarding some run-of-the-river water or other supplies that may be available in the Sabine Basin and maybe upstream of Toledo Bend, which would be a little closer to Dallas. The next slide is just a map that shows you an example of that pipeline project with the Integrated Pipeline Project with Tarrant Regional. Another note I'd like to bring just to your update and attention is Oklahoma Water. You might have heard a little bit about that lately in the paper. Tarrant Regional Water District has been kind of the lead agency with Oklahoma as far as trying to acquire additional water from Oklahoma. They had filed some lawsuits that had gone through the legal processes, and the last step they had to file an appeal with the Tenth Circuit, I guess it's in Denver, and that rehearing for that case was denied. So they're in the process of determining what their next steps will be, whether that's to go to the Supreme Court or some other negotiation approach there. What you can see on slide 38 is sort of where that water is. The Tiamichi River Basin area and Muddy Boggy Creek are the more prolific areas up in eastern Oklahoma, and then the Cache Creek areas on the west. So going into where we're going to go next, there are policy issues that we will incorporate in our review of this next regional or a Dallas water plan. There's a balance of concerns we have to bring forward to you. The timing it takes to do new water supplies. We have a number of stakeholders in that process that's important for us to incorporate again this time. Again, conservation and reuse by far have got to be the fundamental foundation for what we do moving forward. Unfortunately, I don't know that they'll get us to the goals that we need long-term for our service area or the region. The other thing I think it's important that we try to keep as many of our options on the table because water acquisition is often opportunistic, so we need to be in a position to capture some of those as they come along. Our process going forward, as I close, we'll be actually putting an RFP out for an engineering services to go through our planning process, so you'll see that in the future on your agenda. It will include updating the needs, the water supply process, economic alternatives. It will gather stakeholder input, provide opportunities for council and city manager input, too. Then our future plans will be brought forward to fit into the state and regional processes. Slide 42 is that timeline, so to speak. We'd like to be able to move forward, and when we bring these items, and we'll have an opportunity to brief the council on a progress report later in 03. Excuse me. In summary, I guess I'd like to close by suggesting to you, water is our key. I often say that DFW may be the engine, but water is the fuel for that engine, for our region, our city and our region. We'll be actively pursuing multiple strategies as we review these processes. Though we're in pretty good shape for long-range needs, we still need to keep looking at those as we move forward. And with that, I'll close and turn it back to the mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll ask just a couple of questions, and please queue up. Just a clarification. What is the work product that will actually be the result of all this? What is the plan?
The work product will be a list of projects, in essence.
A list of projects.
For lack of a better term, a capital plan.
Got it. When we do them and that sort of thing.
That's right.
Okay, got it. And then what is the climatology assumptions in the state plan? Have they debated that, discussed it, settled on it?
They debated it and discussed it. Have they settled on it? Not really.
Will we have an assumption in our plan?
Yes, we will. I will say that the current conversations at the Water Development Board about the future planning for the 2017 plan address demand numbers as opposed to drought numbers. In other words, they're addressing what demand numbers should you use. Should you use this year's demand? Should you use the year 2000? Because you're looking for a drought demand number. So the climatological impact of the assumptions will have to do with how much water is available, the yield, of, you know, how much runs off into the...
But, I mean, do we assume that it's going to be a temperature, a degree hotter than average?
No. Right now, that's not part, to my knowledge, that's not part of the discussion.
Okay. And then my last question was, I didn't understand point four, equaling 25% of our needs. We need to conserve, and it says equaling. What's that mean?
As part of our long-range need, 25% of that will be accomplished through conservation and reuse.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess I'll go to page 42. I'm kind of looking at the timeline. You know, the plan, Mary, you know, they said the plan would be in the first quarter of 14, and the council approval, and trying to pass the baton to one council member, term limit, and council go off. So if we start going down the road one way, could this plan could be completely different in 2014?
I hope not. I don't think so. We'll bring you the information and you'll make the decisions. But this is a long-range planning process, and there will be numerous councils involved in water planning.
Okay.
And we're preparing to get our plan in to 2017, and y'all will have your input, and we'll pass one. We do one every 5 years. So
It said every 5 years, but it also, I saw somewhere that said the audit, they want to go and start doing an audit every year. There's some with the planning. I saw somewhere in your briefing, Jody.
That audit reference had to do with a water loss audit.
Right. But that still has something to do with the planning if you're going to have a shortage.
Well, that's really telling us that we need to spend money fixing our pipes
and our meters and being sure that we're not losing any water. The standard that we want to be below is 10%, so that's what we'll work for. But that audit is something we do kind of internally to be sure that we're not losing water.
I guess our prior council, when we adopt and we were trying to finalize the 50-year plan, how did we adopt that plan, and how far ahead did we look, and what was the stop and what was the beginning?
Well, the council acted in April of 2005, mm-hmm. I think, adopting the strategies that would be used in the Regency plan. And so those strategies were part of the state's 2007 statewide plan.
Okay.
So we have to work in advance of that timing in order to meet the state's timeline as well.
Okay. On page 36, the map that's showing the project of the pipeline, we are sharing this pipeline with Turner County. If you look at this pipeline, how it is sourced from Lake Palestine going all the way up to Arlington, whatever, where do we connect on the city and from the city of Dallas to go to tie into our water supply?
The current proposal is for that H line, where that red line, that's our current proposal to connect to our Bachman Water Treatment Plant.
Okay. So when we connect that, at what year are we planning the connection?
That connection is planned sometime around 2020, maybe a little later.
Okay.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
So we are in our water plan, we are planning that in 2020, whatever it is, that what volume of water that we would get from our burst going to Turner County, is that determined, predetermined, or that will be determined later down the road, the supply?
The volume that we have is directly related to the amount of water we have in Lake Palestine. And so that is 102 million gallons a day. So that's the minimum amount of water we'll have available to bring to our Bachman plant.
So is that a minimum? What is that, a max also? And what determined the minimum? What determined the max?
The minimum is what we own. The maximum is a function of whether or not we might choose to buy water from them if they had water available. And so,
well, we said to buy water.
Mr. Atkins, look on page 27, and that shows you what we currently have, and then underway you see Palestine, and we're figuring out it'll bring us 100
MGD.
And it's interesting, this chart was developed prior to developing the project to share the line and share the cost.
I thought so.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to get at, so we got to, we said we got to save the $200 million. And I'm trying to say, if our savings is going to benefit the taxpayer, are we look at, into 27, our water supply long term. I'm just trying to make sure that when we have our plan, are we planning right to make sure we have our water,
Yes.
And I'm trying to find, is there a mechanism that stops from us to have a fresh share because of drought, because of something else might happen, that we have to share the water. I guess on page 36, page 20, I believe. On our 2012 draft water plan, it's a recommendation. So, Mary, when you said 2012, this is the city, right? This is where we're going.
No, this is the state's plan, draft right now, and we already have input into this plan. What we're working on now is the next state plan for 2017. The state hasn't finished with their work.
So is this a solid plan? Are this plan to be changed?
It's fairly solid, but it's been put together with a lot of fighting. The issue 5 on the water loss addresses the issue of all public utilities need to be responsible in their maintenance of their systems and in the expansion and growth of their systems such that they don't have to depend on somebody else for water. And so that's really talking about
public utilities need to be responsible for their infrastructure like you have been.
Okay. I said one more. I got two more questions. The other question in construction, you know, we're going back to that sustainable development, you know, when we build surface water running down, are we capturing that water? Is there anything in the plan that we do not own that water will not go back to the city? As are we calculating that in any kind of way?
I don't. The only way that that gets included is if it's in a watershed above one of our lakes, and so it doesn't really get calculated in specific. In this plan.
Okay. And the last question, looking at that 2012 bond package, Mary, are we in a process trying to calculate a dollar amount that we need to put in there? How are we as a council member is trying to prioritize that this should go there for our future plan way down the road?
You remember the water bonds are separate. They're revenue bonds. So
right.
It's a separate program. So they will not be in your bond package that we hope to do this fall.
Okay, but the infrastructure.
Revenue bonds are a separate deal. General fund bonds are streets and libraries and storm drainage and all that. Water bonds are done through the revenue of the water department.
Okay, so therefore, let me back up. Next question. And now, water bond to calculate, you know, we got an old structure, you know, inside the city we're trying to span out. And we still got to spend the bond, and every year that we do increase the water, but we never catch up. Have we forecast what would the rate would be going out?
I think we need to see that
because every year when you're going to do our budget, and we're talking about looking at the budget, you know, 2 years out and forecasting, that when we get to our budget to say the taxpayer, your rate going to be here, I would love to see the pro forma going forward.
We've got a 5-year capital plan, and we can give you rates out. I would say I wouldn't count on them more than 2 or 3 years because they depend on how much water you use, how much water you have available. But the next 2 or 3 years, you can look and you can get a good idea. But like this year, what we projected was a little higher than we needed, so we took it down a little bit. But I think you can count on the projections out about 3 years.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Ms. Margolin?
Thank you. I just need some clarification. On slide 11, toward the bottom, it mentions the Dallas's 2005 long-range water supply plan, whereas above that it talks about the state plan. So is this the 2005 plan that we're updating, is that to be used in the 2012 or the 2017 state plan?
17.
Okay.
So see, we're ahead of them, and then we do local, regional, state.
Okay.
It overlaps, as you can tell.
Okay. And then another question on reuse. Can you give a little bit more elaboration on some examples of how you up the amount of reuse of water?
Well, there's two ways primarily that reuse water is used for water supply. One is to augment the lake volume, and that's through a piping process. Some go through a wetlands, like the North Texas Municipal Water District has a wetlands, and that water runs through that wetlands and pumped back to Lake Levan. And then the other way that it's used primarily is in direct reuse, like irrigation. Golf courses is the prime example. Probably the best example in our region is the Dallas County Utility Reclamation District in the Las Colinas area. A lot of those areas that you see, those common areas, those building campuses out there, the lakes, they're all filled with wastewater effluent from Trinity River Authority's wastewater plant that's on Interstate 30. So that's...
Is it possible for private development to do this, or is it pretty much public uses?
I think that there are opportunities for private development, depending on the types of developments that are available, and the type of water that they produce in their development.
And we do permit that.
You do?
Yeah.
We do. Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Hassel.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Jody, I'm looking at page 27. Our water supply needs in 2060 totals 1,040. And then you've got current, underway, and likely, and then the two at risk were the Fastrel and Wright-Patman, and that equals the 200 that we are still in need of. And then I think I heard you say that we will be looking at Sabine and Toledo Bend to replace those 200.
As potential strategies as we evaluate considering the plan.
So is that part of the plan to evaluate to see if that will make up the 200?
There's a longer list than that, too.
Longer list than those two.
I mean, if Oklahoma started selling us water, that would help a lot.
Okay. My other question, okay, so you said there's more than those two, because my other question was going to be, is that enough if we just look at Sabine and Toledo Bend?
What, there's a list, one of the pages has a list.
The next slide, actually, on slide 28, gives the different strategies that we looked at in the previous plans. Many of those are still out there.
And y'all, the council, determine these strategies, and we will bring you back options, and you will decide what you want on the strategy list. This was a council decision, these on this list.
Okay, and then looking at page 29, Cedar Creek and Richland Chambers not even a possibility, or is there a problem with those two water?
Those are the water supplies for the Tarrant Regional Water District, who serves mostly Tarrant County, so those are taken.
Those are taken. Okay, so the only ones we have to look at are the list that you've got on.
Right, and those potential sites that are in black up there are potential
And so that's the reason we're going north rather than further east.
We'd like to go north. We may have to go further east. We'll have to evaluate them all.
Okay. And then you said there's an RFP going out.
To hire an engineering firm team to help us with this long-range planning update.
Okay, and do we know how much that RFP is?
We budgeted in the current year about $1 million, I think, for the first phase. And so I have scheduled another $1 million in the second year. It just depends on how we end up scoping it and what they come back with.
Okay, so do we have is there a set amount for planning and studying?
Minimum of $2 million is what I've got scheduled.
And that is through the next?
The current year and next budget year.
And it'll do the plan for 2012.
So they'll be working on the plan for 2017, so we may not see it until?
A year and a half or 2 years.
Yeah, you'll see
pieces of it.
Okay. And some glimpses of it in 14. The first quarter, I think, of 14 is what we. And if we get moved along quicker, quite frankly, then we'll bring that forward.
This is water utilities money.
Pardon me?
Yeah.
The ratepayers money.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Ms. Coop.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Couple questions. Jody, first of all, you said that we're working on the drought of record being the 1950s, but in the beginning of your conversation or your briefing, you had indicated that we're in the worst drought statewide that we've ever been in. So that's not the drought of record.
We're in the worst one-year drought. And I think it's important to recognize that the planning window is a six-and-a-half-year window from a drought of record standpoint.
Oh, that was so 51 to 57 is the drought of record.
Yeah. So I think it's relevant to understand we are in the worst one-year drought that we've been in. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, you know, the rainfall, for instance, if you look at the average rainfall during the drought of record over this same 12-month period, it's less than the drought of record for that 1 year. That certainly makes us sit up a little bit and go, where is that taking us? So I think that when you hear the worst drought, well, that's really the term right now, the worst one-year drought.
Okay. Following that kind of line of thought, I'm going to ask one short-term question. I know this is not the short-term briefing, but just one short-term question. Because we're in the worst drought that we've had, and because there are other water districts in our district, in Region C, there are other water districts in our region, if other water districts, I know the answer to this, but I just want to make sure that the rest of the council knows this. If other water districts then run short of their water supply, according to state law, are they able to come in and get some of our water supply?
Yes. Yes. What we, if we're reasonable, by whatever definition that is, we can negotiate the conditions that's sold and the prices that's sold. If we're unreasonable, the state tells us how to do it. So, and yes, next briefing session we'll be talking about that with you. You know, that's one of our concerns as a water purveyor is, are other water purveyors planning as well and investing as well as we do? But yes, that will be a decision that will be coming up, and it'll be our challenge to get the best deal we can for Dallas Water Utilities without at the same time having the state step in and tell us, here's what we want you to do.
Right. Does that go to this consultant that we're going to hire for long-range planning? Because in a way, the short-term planning really affects the long-term planning if indeed other water districts have not planned as well.
It'll, I would certainly never pronounce that other water districts hadn't planned as well, but we have to be aware of what everybody's doing planning-wise.
Yeah, right.
And yes, it would be a part of the consideration, absolutely, because, you know, we as the major purveyor in the area are the ones that the others look to, so that has to be a part of our long-range planning.
So that will be part of the consultant's
yes.
job to do that. Okay.
He won't be negotiating the deals with the other ones, but he will be putting that in the look.
Yeah, it will factor into what he gets.
Yeah,
he, she, they, it will give us back. Okay, I want to talk just a second about water recapture. Walk me through, okay, we've got these gigantic water vaults both on the west and the east side of town, one over near Knox and one over near Industrial. So all the stormwater that's, you know, running through the streets that can't be captured by the stormwater system or the majority, or a lot of it is going into these water vaults to be held during a huge rain to be held and then just released at some measured amount going into the Trinity Basin, okay, and then just forever is lost, right? Now, I have a question about that. I was kind of thinking about something a little bit out of the box. Would it be a thought when you guys are putting together your water plans? Because, well, it's a two-part question. One, do we have to do that because we are demanded by state law to allow that water to run into the basin and then down to the coast? Right, to the coast. Well, we demand that a certain amount of water goes into that, into those tributaries, or can we capture that water and keep it and ask private development, sort of Ms. Margolin's thought, if they want to partner with us, build some huge storage area and on their dime and then sell it back to us at some pre-negotiated price. Has that ever been thought of? But the first part, we need to answer the first part first. Do you have to allow that water to go into the watershed?
My easy answer is yes, but there's always a but. The way water is appropriated in the state, you know, the water behind the dam, I use Lake Louisville as an example. So if someone wanted to capture our water, Lake Louisville water, Louisville or Flower Mound, that water is intended to be used for Lake Louisville from a water rights allocation standpoint. So in theory, any water that falls below where you have water rights sort of belongs to somebody else, at least the state, for them to appropriate. That's just my general answer. Now we've been looking at and we'll ask our consultant team to look at what we call scalping lakes, off-channel reservoirs that would scout flood flows out of Louisville, for instance, so we'd have that later. Now, other communities that have viable aquifers, groundwater storage, they can inject water and store it there. When you store water above ground, it evaporates, so sometimes you don't get as good of an efficiency there. But I think other mechanisms to store water for future use, something that we'll be asking the consultant to look at for us.
Well, I think, you know, I've been around for a while and we've discussed, you know, many opportunities in piping water from West Texas and, you know, I've heard just a variety of ways that
yeah.
perhaps we could survey water and some of them are interesting, but I'd like to add that one you know, this overflow of water during flood stage, and how you would capture that and where you would put it. Because in a way, it goes back to reuse, I think.
Well, it's a form of integrated stormwater management.
Right. I mean, like right now, you're saying you're going to let the overflow go into the Trinity and through the cells, and then you're going to pump it back up so that you could reuse that water. Well, in effect, that's sort of what you're doing here. You just had so much rain that you had to collect it. But for the fact that it didn't rain really, really hard, you know, it would have just flowed into the regular system. But in the water vault situations, you know, you're just collecting it just simply because your system can't hold that much
right.
rain.
Yeah. The opportunities for some of those may be better localized use for irrigation, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to Kelly High about how much water does the milk of the Pole Park facility hold, and it's about 240 million gallons, I think is what he told me, which sounds like a lot of water, but it's not.
I think the other thing is important to remember that the guys that live downriver from us, primarily rice farmers and duck hunters, and a lot of people along the coast, are watching everything we do with this river and the water in the river. And it's always a big discussion of the state legislature about don't anybody upstream do anything to diminish our flow.
And I understand that. And it goes to the salinity of the water. And, I mean, you know, if you live in Colorado for any amount of time, you know that California water rights to the Colorado River are premier. And, you know, Colorado has wanted for years to recapture some of that water because it doesn't do them a lot of good when it has to go on to California. The question really is, to your point, Mary, is it must be a calculation of how many acre feet of water you have to put into the system for downstream to be viable and not have as much salinity or not to increase their salinity. So, I mean,
right,
I'm just curious about it.
Right.
If we could just get some information on it at some point about that, you know, either it's a viable thing or it's not, I have no idea, and I know there's a lot of factors that go into it, but it's just something I think that we shouldn't take off the table right now, Mary, unless we know the answer. I don't think we know the answer, so if we could put that on the table, I would be appreciative.
Sure.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. When it comes to water, and particularly our role as stewards in this long-term planning, you can't help but think of a tragedy of the commons. With several entities acting in their own self-interest, deplete a shared resource that's really against everyone's own long-term interest. So I was wondering, what conversations have we done in the past, and as part of this long-term planning, what are we doing to suggest better practices to our neighbors?
We have those conversations, but I will tell you that everybody thinks they can run their own business pretty well, and we had a council member one time that declared us the 500-pound gorilla. In some of these entities, like Tarrant Regional, we have a really good working relationship, and that's our goal, because you know, our citizens don't see those silly lines that says this is DWU and this is Tarrant Regional, and that pipeline should never be, and that joint pipeline should never be underestimated about what a big step that was, money-wise and kind of establishing a relationship that we, as you said, looked at the whole rather than individual. But it's a challenge. It's political. It's water is such a crisis that, you know, and everybody won't be as helpful as others have been.
And I know we work on several other regional boards and organizations. Is that something we could do with this long-term plan, is look at how we can be better partners with our neighbors so that they can suggest better ways that we manage our water? And since we are the steward of much of the water here in North Texas, how we could tell them how they could help with better management too?
We certainly can do that. I'm just telling you the result won't always be the most positive.
I'm just asking.
Yeah,
we try.
No, and we're trying. And I will tell you, we kind of gloss over this pipeline sharing, but the work that Jody and her staff did on that is a huge step forward in that. Huge step forward. And it sets an example for other folks. I also think that as we move forward with this drought crisis that we're fixing to experience, that pressure will offer more opportunities for the behavior you're talking about.
I agree. I think in that respect, this drought is an opportunity to work closer with our neighbors on this shared resource. Without it, life
much less the economy won't be possible here. So we certainly need to look at that and be willing to help with any of those
okay.
efforts. My second question would be going to reuse for... right now, does the city of Dallas, do we currently, other than Stevens Park, other than the golf courses, do we have any reuse of water that's going into recharged groundwater, or are we just recharging surface water?
No, we don't recharge groundwater with the wastewater effluent. Well, that's one of the things we want to ask our consultant to revisit here. Soil, as you might know, soil conditions make a big difference about how you can recharge groundwater. They're able to do it in the San Antonio area because of the way the aquifer is built. The clays and things like that may not be as suitable here, but it's something I think that we need to look at. It's part of our options.
And then, so currently we are recharging surface water.
We are not directly. Tarrant Regional is, and North Texas is. We have a partnership with the North Texas Municipal Water District to recharge water for Lake Ray Hubbard. It's part of our planning process that we're working on with them, a joint pipeline and a main stem pump station to do that.
And as far as this long-term process, are we examining the, because I know that there's certain federal guidelines for recharging surface water as well as groundwater, and those seem to really set a floor. And if you look at other states that have been doing it sometimes, like Florida and California come to mind, I think they have additional state regulations.
Mm-hmm.
So as part of our long-term planning, are we examining the state regulatory environment to make sure the water is safe and comparing our state rules in place and to see if we were going to have to go above and beyond that by making comparisons to places in California and Florida that have been recharging surface water for much longer than that?
Well, I think the state, first of all, we always, paramount, public safety is paramount. And so I don't think that there are any particular state regulations that would prohibit programs, but by the same token, that's we're part of the review. And so I think that those regulations will just be part and parcel of the analysis and the evaluation.
I think that would be good because other states that have been doing the recharging for some time already have a set of regulations in place to make sure that it's safe recharging surface water and groundwater. And just my last question, more just for the people that may be following this. And it's a local question, or more in the short term, is when are we going to take up the issue of if we should go into stage one, or just so everyone...
November 16th. And we will make recommendations to you that we want to put in place pretty quickly.
I certainly think we need to move that direction. We've been in voluntary water restrictions for some time, and some of our neighbors are already in stage three. So I'd certainly encourage us to look at stage one and stage two.
Let me caution you, their stages and our stages aren't the same thing. They don't line up, but we'll show you that next
we'll
time.
Talk about that on the 16th.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs. Mr. Cadane.
Thank you, Mayor. Jody, I've got just a few questions. One is just to, from my own knowledge, and that's on page six. How do you get a figure of $250 million in wildlife devastation? Why do you put a price on wildlife?
Well, that's a quote we've got from the Texas Parks and Wildlife, and that they estimate that's the impact.
How do they estimate what wildlife?
I don't know, but they have it's an economic estimation that they have a figure that the economy that comes from the wildlife, which is probably tourism, it's hunting,
oh,
it's all sorts of those things. So we can get you the formula if you need it.
No, I was just curious.
I'm kind of curious now.
Who did that? Brought it up. Okay, now Jody on 15. Okay, that this plan that we have to
come up with in January, is that the plan that states what we're fixing to do with our reservoirs as far as developing?
Just to restate, the January 2012 plan is the statewide plan, and it has the previous recommendations that were that the council adopted back in 2005.
Right. Yeah.
And so the fact that these overlap is it kind of confuses me sometimes because it overlaps.
We're working on a plan that will go into the 2017 plan. Right. Okay. Okay. Then FAFSA is gone.
Without congressional action, yes.
Is there any way to move on that? I mean, are we working towards that?
We are not working toward that.
No, and that would be, there are other options on the table. That's one reason that you keep a lot of options on the table, because you can lose one. So that's the reason we have that whole page list.
So we still got it there.
No, well,
it's not
something we're going to work on.
We're going to evaluate in the update of the plan is the options to that related to the Nature's River water.
Okay. Okay, then here's my next question. Do we have any reservoirs that we're looking at to try to put online?
Only Lake Palestine.
Well, we've got Lake Palestine. What are we going to do? I mean, don't we need some new reservoirs for 2060?
We're
not going to just depend on our groundwater and these new ways of getting water.
As you develop and approve long-range plans, that planning will be in there, and you'll say it's in the plan, and then here's how we'll bring back to you, here's how we'll go get it with other water utilities, and here's all the approvals will come. But remember, 25 to 30 years is how long it takes to get that done. But then move that.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, we're not taking it off the table.
We've got to find the reservoirs in order to get that done by that time.
Yes, sir, but we don't do it alone. I mean, the reservoirs, see, this is Region C, which we are in.
Yes.
Most likely reservoirs would be in the region to the east of that. And so we have to get permission and buy it and get partners to fund it with us.
Okay.
And one of the things we hope the state will do moving forward is designate reservoir areas and help structure a mechanism for funding.
Okay.
Helping fund them.
But, and I was reading here, we do have access to Lake Texoma water.
No, we don't. We do not have Lake Texoma water was an alternative strategy, and the North Texas Municipal Water District uses Lake Texoma water and blends it, or had until the zebra mussel issue. It's water and it's wet, but it's an alternative strategy.
Okay, but then what about purchasing water from Oklahoma? That is an option.
That is a goal.
We're trying to do that. Oklahoma's not interested in doing that right now.
Okay.
Tarrant Regional was working on that through court, and at some point in time, we'll have to start talking about negotiating purchases, I guess.
We are working on getting more reservoirs.
We're working on getting more water from wherever we can get it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane. Any other questions? Ms. Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Jerry, just a couple of questions, and I apologize, I didn't hear this asked, so if it has been and I missed it, let me know. Where we are in discussing changes to the water tiers?
My recollection from the budget briefing, or budget amendment day on the 19th, that we would be bringing that back to you guys in January or February. So we're busily working on getting that analysis done, looking at the revenue impacts and so forth associated with bringing those forward.
And if we do bring that forward in January, February, which you will, what is the timeline for implementation of that? Because I had understood from our budget briefing that it would take probably 6 months to implement.
My recommendation with any rate change would be to implement it effective 10-1. You have a period of time where you have to go through, first of all, you have to go through the revenue requirements and all that. You have to make sure your call takers can answer questions about your new rate structures and so forth and so on. So I think it would be easier on our customers to make that change effective 10-1.
So at the start of our next fiscal year?
Yes, ma'am.
And are we technologically ready to do that in our water department if we make the decision in January, February to make those changes?
Yes.
Okay.
If you make it in September, no.
Gotcha. But, if we have a long enough lead time, your department's going to be ready for that.
Right. We've already been looking at the scheduling if that's required, yes.
Very good. I do believe that is a large part of addressing. I don't know that that's going to address conservation. What I do believe it will address is the fact that I know that my constituents had some sticker shock when we talk about that we're going to go up 6%, 7% in our water bills over the next several years, and we're going to have to because we're making significant, enormous capital investments, and I think everyone understands that. I would like to make sure that as much as possible we're taking the load off the people who are conserving water and putting the load on the people to pay for that infrastructure for the folks who are really water hogs. So I'm looking forward to that conversation. Another question, the cities that we sell water to, when you bring back the November 16th briefing and discussion, can we talk about or have a memo or a slide in there just talking about their water conservation efforts? Because I wasn't aware, as Ms. Sims said, I wasn't aware that they had different ideas about stages than we do.
Yeah.
So I'd really like to see kind of where they are and what their stages are and where they are in implementing their water conservation restrictions.
One of the requirements that we would hope that we would be able to initiate as we sell water to somebody is that they have to be in worse shape than we are.
Gotcha.
So that's the kind of conditions we'd like to put on.
Yeah, I think it's also important to remember our wholesale customers are required to implement like measures. So, and that's a different contractual relationship than the sale of water to someone who's not our customer, like a district or an authority.
And lastly, Jody, what is kind of our timeline for looking at how we address building changes, building code changes, and water conservation, whether that's via incentives, and we, you know, talk about water reuse cisterns, et cetera. But where are we on having that discussion? Because I sense that there's a little bit of a disconnect there between water and planning, and I think that we might ought to bring that together as some other cities have done, where we pull together our building codes and water conservation.
It is permitted. These things are permitted. The discussion that we need to have that I would say during the next budget session is, do you want to incent them? The decisions we made about what to incentivize through the water utility are things that give big returns. And so y'all just need to look and see what the return and what you want to do during the next budget process, I would say, because you can do rain barrels and cisterns and that kind of stuff. You're permitted. Y'all just got to decide, do we want to incentivize that?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
What percentage of ballpark percentage water usage would be residential versus business?
Gosh, I knew someone was going to ask me that question, and I'm trying to remember the answer. About 28% of the water sold is single family. About 28% is multifamily, and then a little bit, about 28% retail sales. About 30% is 30 to 35% commercial, as I recall the numbers.
Okay, and as I know you will do, because you know it's kind of like property taxes versus commercial taxes that we do. I think we make more money off our commercial accounts than our residential accounts, but this is tax-wise. So as you do this thing, you come back to us in January, obviously I'm going to be looking very strongly at from the business angle and the overall effect on the businesses also, because they're the lifeblood of the city. So as you do that, make sure you zero in on that for me, if you'd be so kind.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions? Jody, thank you very much. I asked my questions first, so I appreciate it. We look forward to the 16th and the chapter 2.
Thank you.
Of this. Ms. Rios, let me suggest that we take our afternoon speakers, then we'll break into executive session. And in fact, well, let's take our afternoon speakers first, okay?
Thank you. You do have several speakers signed up. Your first speaker is Ozumba Lunt, followed by Otis Fagan, Richard Sheridan, Gwayne Wooten, Marvin Crenshaw, Robert Jones, Sterling McCoy, and Patricia Kirby. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 2 minutes to speak. In just a few minutes, you'll notice a timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please stop speaking. Allow the next individual their turn. You will please address your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Again, your first speaker is Ozumba Lunt. Not present. Otis Fagan. Not present. Richard Sheridan. Mr. Sheridan will be followed by Gwayne Wooten.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Richard Sheridan. I live at 322 Flawless Lane, Dallas, Texas. And Mayor, I appreciate being here. I'm here to speak about ethics, and the title is Per the Bible, Revelation 20, Without Ethics, Some Are Doomed. And these are heavy words. These two documents, the Bible and our Constitution, are foundational to our nation, to our states, to our city, to our communities today. They are the foundation to any ethics code that we develop, any moral code that we develop. Item 2. As Dallas ethics code must be significantly improved, so much must the ethical code of conduct at the county, state, and national levels must be significantly improved. We are faced with a major recession near the brink of another Great Depression because of the unethical conduct of all of us, government, business, and yes, we the people. I do look in the mirror, I do listen to people, and I have come a long way, and I have a ways to go. Some would say, by perception alone, a long, long way to go. We can agree to disagree, as long as we keep an open, continual dialogue. I try to explain myself to people, and I am getting better at it, I think. A couple, three items. When visited by two great Dallas police detectives a few years ago, one detective asked me, or said to me, Mr. Sheridan, what concerns the City Council most about you is that they don't know what you're going to do next. I looked at the officer, I looked up, and I answered, a lot of times, I don't know what I'm going to do next. A well-known Dallas minister has called me a modern-day John the Baptist. And lastly, as I said to the commissioner's court yesterday, advocating for a county mental health facility, my mother did commit suicide and my sister went through a 40-year mental health odyssey. 4, concerning some of the major changes which must be made to our ethics code, we must begin to hold elected officials accountable for lying. That's the number one change. It is a lack of truth that has gotten us in our dilemma. 5, concerning the title of the speech for Revelation 20, Without Ethics, Some Are Doomed. Many are concerned with what will happen in 2012. The Mayans say it will be the end. Some movies say the world will be destroyed. My view is there will be a significant separation, according to the Bible, of the tare from the wheat, the good versus the bad. Revelation 20:12 gives us the best advice as to what to do before God's judgment and God's separation comes. Quote, we will be judged by our actions I pray the city council acts in a good way, terming the ethics revision, to put our city on the path to Martin Luther King's promised land, and I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Sheridan.
The next speaker, Gwen Wooten.
Good afternoon. My name is Gwen Wooten. I live 1,000 Grizzly in Dallas, Texas. I have some concerns about the constitutional rights of homeless people in the city of Dallas. About 3 weeks ago, I was down here, and there were homeless out in the across the street from the library up under the tree where the seats are. There were security guards out there making them move. They couldn't sit out there. A week later, the Occupy Dallas people came, and they live in the back of the city hall. My problem is, why were the homeless told to move from up under the trees? A security guard, I asked her, there she is right there. I asked her, why are you making these people move from up under this tree? She said they can't sit here. They have to sit in, I guess, where they ain't under no trees. I guess they got to sit in the sun where everybody can see them. Now, there's something wrong with this city. When I look at that little house down there, the John Bryan built out of some trees and some mud, which tells me he was homeless when he got here, as most everybody else was in here, except for a few that were changed to Spanish people or something. I don't know the history of what happened to them and how their names got changed. But we got to do something about this. These people pay taxes in the city of Dallas. They might pay taxes on beer and cigarettes and wine and give the sheriff the $5 a night, but they pay taxes here. And they should be able to sit wherever they want to sit. Are you going to think, who are you to tell anybody where they can sit on public property? That's ridiculous. This is supposed to be a free country. From what I'm looking at, y'all need to just build a bridge to Cuba. Is it communism or fascism or what is this y'all doing? This new world order or something? I'm not interested in it, don't want to be part of it. I want to live in the city of Dallas, where I was born. I grew up in a city. I didn't grow up in no country town. I grew up with a downtown Dallas where poor folks, rich folks, everybody lived in this city together. And now all of a sudden it's a white, Hispanic, rich, upper crust. I don't know what's wrong with y'all. But I also want to tell the citizens of this city that these people have been to vote on 10 constitutional amendments. And I had to call a state representative to get information about it. That's ridiculous. Who's teaching anybody anything? Store owners don't know about this. Community people don't know about this. And if you black people and poverty-stricken people don't look at Article 4, you're going to be homeless because it's blighted, it's underdeveloped, it's not. They're going to tear it down and build some townhouses. And you're going to be living homeless just like everybody else going to be if y'all don't straighten up. That's all I got to say.
Thank you, Ms. Wood.
Your next speaker is Marvin Crenshaw. Not present. Robert E. Jones. Not present. Sterling McCoy. Not present. Patricia Kirby. Not present. That concludes your speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. We will... it is 3:12. P.M. And I'm about to announce we're going to go into executive session, but we're going to have a birthday cake at the same time. So let me read this, and then we'll have our birthday cake, okay? The City Council will now go into closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meeting Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda: legal issues regarding federal funding of city programs, regulatory and other legal issues related to gas drilling, legal issues involving the appointment and removal of municipal court judges. We have no other business, but we will reconvene, and I will adjourn this when this is over. Thank you.